Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with poet Allison Pellegrin, whose new book is Waterlines. We'll have a visit with Doug Keller and Ashley Teamer of Big Class, the citywide writing initiative. Then we'll talk with some 7th graders at Lusher Charter School who publish a Harry Potter newspaper. It's a real pleasure to welcome poet Allison Pellegrin back to The Reading Life. She's the author of The Zydeco Tablets, Big Muddy River of Stars, and Hurricane Party, and she teaches at Southeastern Louisiana University. Today we're talking with her about her beautiful new poetry collection, Waterlines. Allison, welcome back to The Reading Life.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
This is the most beautiful book. It's so emotionally available to the reader, especially the Louisiana reader.
Thank you. I'm really proud of it. I think it's a beautiful object to look at it, and I'm proud of the poems as well.
Tell us, one of your defining metaphors in this book is setting paper boats upon the water, that whole idea of origami. And that is kind of what Louisiana writers do, isn't it? It's such a defining metaphor.
I've always been a fan of the Chinese poet Li Po, and I don't know if this is a true story about him or not, but the story is that he would wander the countryside of China writing poems, and when he finished the poems, he would just set them to float on the river and they would go away. So art for him was reduced to the act of simply creating, nothing else. And I've been in love with that metaphor. In my book, the opening poem is the poem folded into a boat and offered to the Bogofalaya. And I really like that poem in my collection as well because it wasn't the first poem that I wrote, but it was the poem around which everything started to take shape. I was at a point where I felt blocked as a writer. I didn't know what was going to be happening next in my work. And I sat down at the desk, filled with faith, knowing that something was going to happen. And what happened was that title. And then the poem came shortly behind it. And it was one of those magical poems where everything just came out. I don't know that I maybe changed one line after I finished it. And I really did fold it up into a paper boat. And my sons and I walked off on a little trail on a bridge after church and dropped it into the water of the Bogofalaya.
Wow.
So that became a practice of ours that we adopted that whole summer. This was a few years ago. But we started folding poems into different shapes, and it became this fun practice that we had. I would write the poems on them, and we would go hide them in places, like a vandalism that no one really notices.
A happy vandalism.
Yeah.
I mean, and we should say that you do wonderful origami, and I am holding this tiny paper shrimp that is evidence of your skill.
Thank you. Well, I wanted to bring a bookmark for
yes,
you.
Yes, that's a wonderful
a
bookmark. Now, a lot of these poems have a real ritual quality. You know, I think, for example, of one of my favorite poems in this book, which is May You Find the Words You Need. And it has such a remarkable quality of benediction.
That poem came to me, it was really a gift from another poet. The poet Camille Dungy wrote that inscription in my copy of her book, Smith Blue, at AWP a few years ago. And she wrote, "May you find the words you need." Now, I know that she probably writes that in everyone's books, but it felt like the most personal and intimate thing she could have put in a book for me. And the poem that I wrote, obviously, it has that as a title, and it just kind of picked up on the spirit of benediction, as you say, that I felt in reading her words.
Well, so let's hear that one.
Of course. The words you need. May you find the words you need. May you mutter in sleep, and may the talk run over into morning's pale skirts and steamed mirrors. May a madness possess your mouth, and may one day the curses lift, a sudden anthem of clouds revoked from the hypnotic, blinding sun. May you see cursive when you stargaze, words in the sand and words in the sound of the surf. When you open your mouth, let hornets swarm. In other words, may your insults sting. May you wake one day fluent in birdsong and the Arabic of scattered seed. Midwestern words aplenty should you desire to praise blackbirds pitching on tassels of corn, and a southern drawl when you need to bewitch. May God whisper in your ear God's names, the syllables shifting like an opal's hues. May you object with graffiti on the sides of trains. May you welcome the blues, words tattooed on your chest, unerasable psalms running the length of your scars. Curse like your shirt's on fire, and let every breath be a prayer. May you witness cherry blossoms surrender, and, in surrendering, utter an opera of sighs as the wind shudders through the leaves. May you be wise in the way of mystics who know that sometimes words are not enough, and who then welcome silence in the shadows of flowering trees.
So now I feel like you've passed that message on, and it was just for me. I love that poem
Thank
so
you.
Much.
Thank you so much.
There's so much of Louisiana in this book. There's the very landscape that we live in that is being so altered even as we speak.
Yes.
There's voodoo. There's Mardi Gras. I love that poem, Parading Around. And the first line of that poem is, "It just so happens I'm sick of parades." Who hasn't felt that? So do you think you'll ever run out of inspiration here?
No, I don't. Every day I walk my dog up and down the same road, looking into the same ditch at the same plants and fish jumbled and running from my shadow. And it's never boring to me. It's always beautiful to me. Even if I'm angry about the state or sad about this area, I still have words to say about it. So no, I do not think I will run out of things to say.
You've done several collections now, and I'm curious about how poets put together collections, you know, because this one is so gracefully intertwined. I mean, the themes are so strong throughout. The idea of water, the idea of those paper boats, just the quality of life here that you're going after. And I wonder, does that get easier for you as you write more?
No, it does not get easier for me. Every time I put a book together, I feel like I'm learning how to do it. I like to spread all of the poems out on the floor, which takes a lot of floor, and then my cat thinks it's fun to come sleep right on the middle of them or walk on them or start chewing the edges. It takes so long to write the poems, and when you get to the point that you're putting a book together, it's hard to see it as a whole entity as well. I had a lot of help from Ava Heyman on this project, so it was useful to have another set of eyes helping me to see the larger picture, because sometimes you're so close to the work that it's difficult to figure that out.
So how do you know when you're done?
I don't ever know that I'm done. I mean, I'll give a reading from a book and sometimes bring a pencil and make a change. I mean, I knew I was finished when this book was in manuscript form. I really don't think I changed more than one or two sentences and an article here or there. So it was pretty close to finish. I guess you just feel like you've written that vein out, or this particular composition that I've put together. It gets to the point where you're just decorating it, maybe, instead of making substantive additions to it.
Is that the moment that the poem is finished for you when you read it in public? You've recently given your first readings from this book.
No, I mean, the poems I knew here were very finished long ago before this. And for me, the music of a poem is so important. So hearing it out loud is important to me as I'm writing it. And so I will sit at my desk and read when I have a draft or when I think I'm finishing a draft. And that will help me to make changes based on sound and music that I don't see with just the eye.
I think you have to read poetry aloud. I really do. So I wonder if you'd read one more poem for us that I think a lot of people would like, and that is Hot Sauce Shrine.
Of course, I'd love to. Hot Sauce Shrine. I used to be a high priestess of tail feather, feel good mumbo jumbo, naysayer extraordinaire, cobbling together some crazy quilt catechism to cling to as I tangled in the world's thorns, frantic, fearing the chill soon to come. I haven't turned holy roller or handler of snakes, but things changed slowly or all at once. Maybe it was when I drove through a dust devil and inhaled its grit of cut grass and cigarette butts. I've taken to praying since the whirlwind shook me loose, or anyway I dip my head at stoplights until I get distracted by scenery or birds, and the prayers come out confused. I'm clueless. My angel of place smokes blunts and speaks to me in bug bite braille. I know to visit St. Rock and turn his statue to the wall, but I hunger for alone time on an island with an organ that plays itself, or to whisper all my secrets to the hot sauce shrine. I read that the world is a dream of God, and now I don't know what to do with my hands. The world is God's dream, and I am a sparrow passing through song and the brass glow of fire. Or maybe that is wrong, and I'm trapped inside, stunned against the glass or down the chimney, terrified of kind hands that sweep me to the door. When I wake, I'm walking the moonlit labyrinth with wet feet, and the birds are quiet because I have terrified them with the thunder of my stumbling. O God of everything that creeps, I light a candle and ask my question. Is it pilgrimage enough if I spend my life remembering the few seconds I was a bird?
I love that so much.
Thank you.
I love my angel of place, too.
Thank you.
Don't you often think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
She's out there looking out for us.
Always.
We've been talking with a wonderful poet, Allison Pellegrin, whose fine new book is Waterlines. Allison, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited to welcome my next two guests to The Reading Life. Doug Keller and Ashley Teamer are with Big Class, a citywide initiative for young writers. If you've ever wondered where the next literary generation is coming from, it's programs like Big Class that are giving them support. Doug Keller is the founder and executive director of Big Class. He came to New Orleans in 2009 to teach elementary school after working in the film industry and as a freelance writer. He started Big Class in 2011 as a classroom book project for his 43 first graders. Word spread about the program, and here we are. New Orleans native Ashley Teamer is a NOCA grad who moved back to New Orleans in 2013 after attending Boston University. She began as a Big Class volunteer, and now she's the in-school programming manager. Doug, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you.
You too, Ashley.
Thanks.
So Big Class is 5 years old this year. That is amazing. Congratulations.
Thanks.
So tell us about your process. Doug, you started this program making books with 43 first graders. That's a lot of first graders.
Yeah, we had too many 6 and 7 year old bodies in one classroom. I had a background, as you mentioned, in projects, right? And project-based learning is such a huge part of engaging students in the creative process and especially in the writing process. And so we wanted to do that in our classroom, and we got all these artists together to illustrate the students' stories, and we published the book. And it was very specific to that class at that time, 5 years ago now, where it was just this exciting process for that classroom and that school community. And what we did is we actually put the book in stores to raise money for the next project. And we did do another project with those first graders. But what happened is other people started reaching out. And that is sort of the genesis of what is now a huge organization with tons of volunteers doing a lot of different work, all based in the same idea of project-based learning, creating books by young writers, and the support of a larger community. So there's that metaphor of Big Class in addition to the literal.
Yeah. Yes. Now, Ashley, you got interested in this kind of thing when you were illustrating a children's story, right?
Yeah, I was in high school, and at NOCA, when I was there, every day they come with like a different project happening in the city that you should know about or that maybe you can help with. And Big Class opportunity was one of those daily updates. So I just signed myself up. I was like, I can draw an illustration for a story written by a young person. So great. And then I kind of just did it. And then I went to college. And then when I moved back to New Orleans, I was still like on the email list for Big Class. And I saw that Doug and Big Class was looking for someone to design some books. And I came back to New Orleans to do an artist residency at the St. Rock Community Church. And I just kind of answered the call. And
now we gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
One of the great things about Big Class is that the books are so much fun to look at. You know, I still have a little box from the second year of all those books, and they are beautiful. beautiful. I treasure them. So, Doug, tell us how students can get involved. Tell us how volunteers can get involved.
We do a wide variety of programs, both in schools and in the community. Right now, we're always recruiting for volunteers. Right now, we have a specific need for folks who are able to lead writing workshops because we actually have a writer's room at a school in Central City called Sylvanie Williams, and that's all writing clubs. So it's all led by volunteers, these small clubs. Students get pulled out of class to work on creative writing. It's really amazing. And then we also have a residency at the Gentilly Library this year where we'll be in the teen room every Thursday doing workshops. But we also do these in-school projects, which are collaborations with teachers. We do our Poetry Everywhere project where we're doing poetry workshops around the city and in schools. And then we have our High School Youth Advisory Council. So they actually meet one Saturday a month and are both mentored in a writing field. And they also develop ideas for big class. And we actually used to have an after school program, and we will again next year because we're on our way to opening a youth writing center in the 7th Ward. And so that's going to bring some more community-based programs to big class.
So that's going to be open in summer of 2017. That's your target. So it'll be open all year round?
It'll be open all year round. Yep. That's after fantastic. School, homework help and writing, field trips during the day, storytelling and bookmaking field trips, workshops in the evenings. We're going to have podcasting and filmmaking with writing at the center of it. Obviously, writing is at the core of everything that we do. And the whole idea is to get kids excited about writing. So doing that through a number of different mediums is part of books first and foremost. But we also get excited about other mediums as well.
Now, you've done some great things and you have some ongoing projects. And I thought maybe you might tell us about pizza poetry.
Pizza poetry is just this crazy idea that two of our volunteers, Carrie Chappell and Kelly Jones, had years ago. They were volunteering in our after school program and they said, what are we doing for Poetry Month? And I said, I have no idea. We have this great relationship with the pizza place next door. And we said, why don't we publish poems on those pizza boxes? And then we said, why don't we do that around the city? And so now every year for National Poetry Month, we publish poems on pizza boxes for pickup and delivery by students ages 6 to 18. From all around the city. So it's a really exciting, energetic time of the year for us in April.
Well, it's a great way to celebrate National Poetry Month. So what about poetry and potholes? That sounds promising.
We've always had high schoolers involved in pizza poetry, and they were tasked last year with creating their own sort of offshoot of pizza poetry. And they were thinking about this idea of how do we get the voices of our high schoolers out there? And so they said, well, potholes are a problem in our city, and why don't we make something ugly beautiful? And so they did it. It was 20 students last year, and they filled the potholes with traffic cones, and then they put their poems on top, laminated beautifully. And this year, we're hoping to grow that element and put it under the umbrella along with pizza poetry of Poetry Everywhere. Just a way to get young people excited about poetry and have the pizza poetry element remain for grades 1 through 8 for our elementary age students, and then have high schoolers have the opportunity to publish in potholes.
You're never going to run out of potholes either, I feel sure. So keep those poems coming. So how many schools are you all in now?
I guess the way to think about that is that we are in 2 schools year-round. So we're in Sylvanie Williams and Eisenhower, and then we do residencies.
We're planning on doing 4, 2 in the fall, and I think maybe possibly 3 in the spring. Mm-hmm. And these would all take place at different schools. So we potentially going to be in 5 different schools by the end of the school year.
And what is your measure of success?
So I think big class is really about growing confidence in your own voice. We are definitely measuring, you know, skill set, growing skills, you know, the ability to construct the organization of your story and elaboration, all that kind of stuff. But what we really want kids to get out of working and, in publishing a book is the excitement for writing. We want when they publish a book to just take that with them and say, I published a book, I want to keep writing. And we do all kinds of different measures, but I think one of the things that's just always exciting when Ashley and I go into schools that we've worked in before is kids coming up to us and being like, are we going to publish another one? And just that, like, that excitement is around writing, you know, around books, you know, I mean, that kind of excitement is really where we're looking for.
I like it. They're already looking for complete works.
Yeah. I think that's the most exciting thing when you see students and they're like, when am I going to be able to come to the writer's room? When are we doing another project? Like, they associate seeing us and our volunteers with like doing something that they're really excited about, which is writing. So I think seeing excitement is something that is a great measure.
So you have one big important fundraiser coming up this fall, Doug. Tell us about that.
We have an event called The Dark and Stormy Night on October 20th. It's a literary Halloween party, and it has a ghost story cocktail competition at the center of it. And I think there's an interesting kind of thing behind that, which is that part of the Youth Writing Center that I mentioned is going to have this really unique storefront called the New Orleans Haunting Supply Company, so a store for ghosts. This was a store that was created by our students and is within the model of a national organization called 826 that we're in chapter development with. They have a pirate store in San Francisco behind which is a Youth Writing Center. They have a superhero store in Brooklyn behind which is a Youth Writing Center. And so our Youth Writing Center will have a haunting supply company in the front of it. And so that's where Dark and Stormy Night comes from and how it ties in with our work.
Well, it's a great idea. We've been talking with Doug Keller and Ashley Teamer of the Citywide Writing Initiative for Young Writers, Big Class. To find out more and support this wonderful program, go to bigclass.org. Thanks, Doug. Thanks, Ashley.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One of the great book events this summer was the July 31st publication of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, the script of the play that's presently on stage in London. J.K. Rowling's books have inspired so much admiration and creative work, and these four guests are part of that wave. Today we'll be talking with writers and editors Cicera Holbrook, Allie Flemington, Emma Rue, and illustrator Cara Daveron, all seventh graders at Lusher Charter School. They published The Quibbler, which keeps us up to date on Potterdom as well as expanding our magical horizons. So welcome to The Reading Life, Quibblers.
Thank you for having us.
It's fun to have you all. I love your newspaper. Now, I understand that you all were first in line at the Harry Potter party at Octavia Books. What was that like, Cicera?
Well, it was very exciting.
Have all of you read it already? Allie, what about you?
Yeah, I did read it already, and I enjoyed it.
I definitely liked it a lot. It did have a different voice, though, I guess, because J.K. Rowling wasn't the only one that wrote it.
And it's a play. Reading a play is just different. So I want to know what inspired you to start The Quibbler, because this is a lot of work. To describe them, I mean, they're full-color illustrations. There are many pages. There are lots of features. It's like a lot of work to put out a regular little newspaper like this. So whose idea was this?
Well, I guess Allie kind of inspired it, but then I thought that we should start writing it because in fifth grade, our math teacher was like doing a market day for school, and we were like selling Harry Potter merchandise and butterbeer and stuff, and I thought we should make a Quibbler.
So how long has it been now, Allie?
It's been a little over a year now since we started writing it.
And Sissy, what's kept you interested in this?
Well, we all really love writing, and we love Harry Potter, and it's just very fun to write and come up with new ideas to write the story.
And Cara, you're the recent arrival to this group. So tell me what it's like to come on board as an illustrator.
I just wanted to help them make the Quibbler better because they had a lot of work to do. So I figured I could help by drawing for it.
Every newspaper needs an art director. I speak from experience. But you've drawn, you know, cartoons for the paper as well as illustrating other stories, right?
Yes.
And how long do you think you can keep this going?
I think we can keep it going for a while until we run out of ideas or whatever.
There's no end to the inspiration of this place. I want to know who thought of the idea for the ads for pets for adoption.
Emma, I think, maybe started it. She wrote just a small advertisement for a pet, and we kind of all added on to it.
So, Emma, did you think of the idea of dividing them up into magical and non-magical creatures?
I think so, yeah.
I love that idea. Don't you wish you really could adopt some of these magical creatures?
Definitely.
And what? Tell us about some of the other features you came up with, Allie, for the paper. There's a little bit of gossip, isn't there?
Yes.
Do y'all make that up together?
Usually.
And an advice column?
I think that started as Emma's idea, and we all like alternated through writing them.
And what about the search for Professor McGonagall? I thought that was very interesting.
I think that was Emma's idea. She wrote it in the very first Quibbler that we sold at our market day. And I think it came to an end an issue ago or two.
Yes, it did. I did read that. I knew it came to an end. But I love the idea of things like that that go on and on through different issues. Now, why was it the Quibbler, Emma? Why not the Daily Prophet?
Well, we thought that the Daily Prophet was more like a newspaper and it would have to be daily.
Oh,
and
right.
We didn't really want to do daily. It's monthly. We thought it would be more manageable.
We've been talking with Sissy Holbrook, Allie Flemington, Emma Rue, and Cara Davaron, seventh graders at Lusher Charter School who produced the Harry Potter newspaper, The Quibbler. For subscription information and to be in touch, you can write them at quibblertrio@gmail.com. Girls, Quibblers, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Laura Naughton discusses and signs The Jaguar Man, a memoir, Tuesday, August 30th at 6 at Octavia Books. The Podunk Writers Alliance sponsors a fundraiser for Terry Sue Shrum, who is battling pancreatic cancer, Tuesday, August 30th from 7 to 9 at the Ace Hotel. There will be readings by six best-selling, award-winning New Orleans authors, Emma Walsh, Bill Lofelm, Kelly Harris DeBerry, Gian Francisco Smith, Nick Maneri, and Maurice Carlos Ruffin. Nick Fox will MC the evening, and DJ Sepp will spin tunes. One Book, One New Orleans presents Alana Harris, a.k.a. A Mama Pretty of the New Orleans Creole Belle Baby Dolls, telling true stories of a baby doll. That's Wednesday, September 1st from 6 to 8 at Blue Cypress Books on Oak Street. And remember, the one book selection this year is The Baby Dolls, Breaking the Race and Gender Barriers of the New Orleans Mardi Gras Tradition by Dr. Kim Vaz DeVille. Celebrate Happy Loop Day, Saturday, September 3rd at 1:30 at Octavia Books. Come dressed as your favorite character to celebrate the arrival of Tales of the Peculiar, a new book by Ransom Riggs. Aditi Khurana discusses and signs Mirror in the Sky, Sunday, September 4th at 3 at Octavia Books. Brad Richard will lead the Maple Street Bookshop book group's discussion of A Swarm of Bees in High Court by Tanya Foster. That's Thursday, September 8th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop. Stephen Ray, author of Finn McCool's Football Club, is teaching a fiction writing class Tuesdays from 7 to 9 from September 20th to November 15th. That's in the upstairs art gallery at Trio on Tulane Avenue. Limited enrollment, but everyone is welcome. For more details, visit Stephen, that's STEPHEN-REA.com, or email Stephen at Stephen-Ray.com. And some important dates are coming up. Dillard University hosts a conference on the Black Arts Movement Southern Influences, September 9th through 11th. VoucherCon, that great gathering of mystery writers and readers, takes place September 15th through 18th. Contraflow, for science fiction and fantasy fans, takes place September 30th to October 2nd. The Louisiana Book Festival is October 29th at the State Capitol in Baton Rouge. Words and Music, a literary book festival in New Orleans, takes place November 9th through 13th. And the New Orleans Book Festival is November 11th through 12th. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.